This is a 720 to go podcast from Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
This podcast is sponsored by ADM.
As one of the world's largest agricultural processors, ADM is uniquely positioned to serve the world's growing needs for abundant food and renewable energy. ADM.
When it comes to the business of America's farmland, you need the information from the people who know it best. That's why we bring you AgriCast with Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong.
Thank you very much, Roger, and good morning to you. Good morning to the world from Clear Channel. Well, no, we're not Clear Channel anymore. That went away a long time ago. But anyway, thanks to the internet, I guess we can be heard around the world. And for the next 50 minutes or so, we're going to be talking agriculture, agribusiness, the most basic industry on the planet, because it feeds all of us. And today, as I said, I'll be visiting with the cattleman from Yavapai County, Arizona. That's about 100 miles north of Phoenix. And we'll be talking about the cattle industry that has been a challenge price-wise over the past year or so. So we'll be visiting with them, and then next week we'll visit with dairy folks from around the world. I think about 70 countries will have citizens attend World Dairy Expo in Madison, Wisconsin, on Tuesday through Saturday of next week. That's what we are going to be talking about this morning here on the Saturday Morning Show when we continue right after this. It seems like it was just a few days ago when we rang down the curtain on the 50th annual World Dairy Expo. And here we are, ready to open the 51st edition. And I have on the line with me from Madison, Wisconsin, Scott Bentley, General Manager of World Dairy Expo. And Scott, I would bet this is a very busy time for you and the staff.
Well, it's busy for me and the staff, but it's also busy for the hundreds of volunteers who are already on grounds welcoming commercial exhibitors and dairy cattle exhibitors on a beautiful day before the week of World Dairy Expo.
So let's take a look at some of the numbers and some of the activities. First of all, what about the commercial exhibit area? Does it continue to grow?
Well, it continues to maintain in size, and it continues to maintain, if not slightly grow, in terms of demand. It's the must-exhibit global dairy trade and exhibition show for our commercial exhibitors, and we have a sold-out footprint once again for our trade show, and very similar on our cattle show, where surprisingly enough, through some difficult economic times with milk prices, it would appear that the number of cows and cattle on grounds for the 51st World Dairy Expo will be similar to what it was last year during our 50th year.
And from a cattle standpoint, is it still possible to bring cattle from other countries to this show, or do health regulations make that a thing of the past?
Realistically, we only have cattle exhibited from two countries, the United States and Canada. Now, we may have some international ownership, but in terms of where the animals come from and their country of origin, two countries, the U.S. and Canada, both well represented again this year.
And let's talk about the human element. How many countries do you expect to have visit the show this year?
Well, we had a record last year. 101 countries had registered international attendees for the 50th World Dairy Expo, and we've been nearly 100 countries for the last several years. Demand has been strong again this year in terms of visa applications and some of the pre-expo paperwork. So we would expect somewhere near 3,000 international attendees. That's registered international attendees from approximately 100 countries.
And can you give me an idea of the top two or three countries from the attendance standpoint?
Absolutely. Obviously, U.S. first. Canada and Mexico always in the top two or three. Not surprisingly, we've seen a tremendous percent and total numbers increase from China in recent years, and they are now our number three or number four country for registered attendees. And we continue to see growth in the Far East. I think that tracks some of the agriculture growth and the demand for protein in the Far Eastern countries.
So let's take a look, because in your news release, I see new for 2017. What will we see that we haven't seen before?
I think there's two things that come to mind very quickly. Number one, Expo TV has been a live streaming of the dairy cattle shows throughout the week of World Dairy Expo, live on the grounds, and YouTube from the World Dairy Expo website. We have added a fourth channel, an educational channel, what we're calling Expo 360, that will be operating from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. each and every day. This is the educational opportunity for on-site, but perhaps more importantly, remote participants in World Dairy Expo, where they will be able to see snippets from the trade show, snippets from our sponsors, the virtual farm tours, the educational seminars. Those will all be taped and broadcast for all of our viewing audience, no matter where they may be, on Expo Channel 4 or Expo 360. So great educational opportunities for students, for mid-level managers on farms, for international viewers, no matter where they may be. And then the second thing for folks on grounds, we're adding a social area, a dining area called the Tan Bark. So we know that the Tan Bark infers the show ring, and so we have a new dining and social area called the Tan Bark, which is open beginning at 11 a.m. and throughout into the evening, which is an excellent opportunity to relax, to converse over food and drinks in a very comfortable environment. So I think those two things come to mind, Orion, as new for the 2017 World Dairy Expo.
The Tan Bark looks like fun. Where will that be located?
The Tan Bark will be located adjacent to and adjoining the Estramate Sail Pavilion, which is in the same location that it has been for the last 10-plus years, and that is just due west of the Coliseum. So everyone knows where the Coliseum is. You go out the west lobby doors and across the road, and that's where the Tan Bark will be located.
Now, talking about cattle from the standpoint of shows, of course, you have those throughout the World Dairy Expo. But again, will all or most of the breeds hold sales of breeding cattle?
Great question. We will have a Guernsey, an international Guernsey sale, an international Jersey sale, an international Brown Swiss sale, an international milking shorthorn sale, and all of those sales precede the Friday night International Holstein Classic. So we have five breed sales that will be held on site during the week of World Dairy Expo. Of course, we have seven major dairy breeds that will have their national or international shows. And we have an eighth show because we also have the National Holstein Junior Show held during World Dairy Expo.
You mentioned Junior. I want to bring up an event apparently that is new as well, and that's to find the International Young Showmanship Person.
Well, what we have is we have always had a very strong and vibrant showmanship contest, but we are opening up our youth contest to international participants. So you don't have to be from the Midwest or even from the United States to participate in the youth competitions that take place during the week of World Dairy Expo. Showmanship contest, fitting and clipping contests. You can be from any country in the world as long as you meet the youth and age eligibility requirements. And we think that's a great opportunity for everyone to participate that would like to be a part of the World Dairy Expo experience, regardless of your country or origin.
And I, of course, remember the days when you would load people on buses and travel out to dairy farms to actually visit a successful Wisconsin dairy farm. But that came to an end with health concerns with all of the visitors from other countries. So I think you did something very well. The virtual farm tour, how many of those will you be doing?
Well, we have, I believe it is, I have to do the math now. You caught me off guard on that one. We have six virtual farm tours that take place during the week of World Dairy Expo. And instead of bringing our attendees to the dairy farms, we bring the dairy farms to the attendees. And so For folks who are on grounds and even online watching, again, through Channel 4 or Expo 360, this is your opportunity to see the finest dairy farms and innovation and technology and working together as a family brought to you and to your TV screen, wherever they may be. Those are going to be somewhere from coast to coast in the United States, and that is one of the more well-received innovations that we have brought to our attendees in recent years.
And I'm looking forward to attending the Night of Honors, where you pay tribute to some of the top people in the dairy industry. Tell me about that.
Well, that's one of our real highlights, and that's certainly a long-standing World Dairy Expo tradition. This year will be the 48th annual Dinner with the Stars. And the Dinner with the Stars is where we recognize, with the World Dairy Expo distinction, the Dairy Woman of the Year, the Dairy Man of the Year, the Industry Person of the Year, and the International Person of the Year. And these honorees are recognized by their peers. They have gone through a vetting process. They've been nominated by peers in the dairy and ag industry. They have been judged by individuals anonymously in the agriculture industry, and they're the finest of the finest. Just like our cattle and our trade show exhibitors, these individuals will be recognizing this year truly stand for all that is good in the agriculture industry globally.
Then let's look at the details. When does the show open every day? When does it close every day? And the closing ceremony, of course, is always a highlight.
Absolutely. I'll give you a quick rundown. World Dairy Expo runs from Tuesday, October 3rd through Saturday, October 7th. Our trade show hours every day, Tuesday through Saturday, are 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. in all trade show locations. Our dairy cattle shows in the Coliseum show ring started at approximately 7:30 each morning, again, Tuesday through Saturday, accumulating with the Holstein show on Saturday. And the crowning of the supreme champion of World Dairy Expo will be at 5 p.m. on Saturday evening. So it is a very full week, and we combine those shows and trade show hours with, again, the seminars, the virtual farm tours, all the educational opportunities that go on throughout the week as well.
And then the final question, and you probably can't answer it, but what color will the shavings be in the show ring this year?
That is a tremendous question, Orion, and you are right. I'm not going to answer that question. That'll be one of those opportunities that folks will have when they step on grounds or when they watch Expo TV for the first time on Tuesday morning. That's hopefully one of our best guarded secrets, and hopefully we've done that again this year. But I can say that the theme of the 2017 World Dairy Expo is Discover New Dairy Worlds, which we think is very appropriate on so many levels as we begin our 51st year here in Madison, Wisconsin at World Dairy Expo, and also as this global dairy industry continues to evolve at a very rapid an accelerating pace. Discovering New Dairy Worlds, we believe, is a very fitting theme for World Dairy Expo this year.
I would agree with you on that, and I'll wait till I get there on Wednesday to see what the color is.
We look forward to having you.
Well, thank you, and I look forward to being there. And so I'll see you on Wednesday when I'm going to be there to interview many of the honorees. So thank you to Scott Bentley, who is General Manager of World Dairy Expo, with us here on the Saturday Morning Show. Coming up to news time here on the Saturday Morning Show, and when we come back, we'll share with you some personal thoughts on Samuelson Says, and particularly involving farm safety at harvest time. And then Max will join us to visit with Steve Georgie of Allendale, based in McHenry, Illinois, talking harvest and harvest volume and prices and demand for the products that we're producing. We did get some quarterly reports this week from the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Thursday, we got the quarterly pig crop report. Not really any surprises there, continuing to produce more pork. I think the hog numbers were up about 2% from a year ago. But then on Friday, yesterday, the September soybean and corn supply-demand and the supplies that we have on hand. And there were some surprises there because in its quarterly stocks report, USDA reported that domestic corn ending stocks went up 32% from a year earlier, and that put corn stocks at their highest level since 1988. Soybean ending stocks up 53% from a year ago, and that is a 10-year high for stocks of corn and soybeans. Every time I look at these numbers going up and up and up, I think back to the 70s when something called gasohol made its appearance on the agricultural scene in the United States. There was a lot of hand-wringing and a lot of talking about how dare we take food and put it in our gas tank. Well, we have taken it, put it in our gas tank, built another industry with what is now called ethanol and biodiesel. If the financial incentive is there, and even if it isn't, farmers will still produce. Well, thank you very much, Roger, talking to you this morning from the desert, from Scottsdale, Arizona, before heading out to Peoples Valley, Arizona, the Yavapai County Cattle People Club Calf Sale and Beef Barbecue. It's been going on for 85 years and started 85 years ago to provide financial support for what has become the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, which is NCBA, the largest cattle industry group in the country. But 85 years ago, it was having financial problems. So the cattlemen in Yavapai County said, let's do something to raise money. And that was the beginning of the club calf sale and the beef barbecue. As a matter of fact, as we talk, there is about 1,500 pounds of beef in 30-pound clods, as they call them, buried 6 feet underground on a bed of charcoal, and they put the beef there yesterday at noon. Today at noon, the FFA members will shovel the dirt off the metal cover of the 6-foot-deep hole, and they'll start pulling out those clods of beef, serving them to, about 1,500 people who show up. It's an event that we've attended for the last 10 years, and it's one that we always look forward to. Incidentally, the temperature in the desert in the Phoenix area, 73 degrees this morning. Weather is as clear and as comfortable here as it turned this past week back in the Midwest. We begin the second half of the Saturday morning show with Samuelson Says, sponsored by Wink Products Company, makers of quality specialty cleaning products since 1947. I'm Orion Samuelson, and the question this morning, what is SMV? I've been on the air for the folks at Wink Products Company for decades, and I'm just delighted because this is one of those Midwest success stories. Wink is a family-owned corporation in rural Eldora, Iowa that has manufactured specialty cleaning products for 70 years. And today, Wink is a nationally recognized brand because Wink products work. Learn more about the family of Wink products at wink.com. That's WHINK.com. It's always interesting to see where some of the emails originate and why. This past week, I heard from farmers in three different parts of the country, and all of them said, we haven't heard you talk about SMV, and isn't it time to remind people of what it means? Well, yes, I guess it is. We talked safety during National Farm Safety and Health Week a couple of weeks ago, and I talked more about engulfment in grain bins as being a major challenge, but the ongoing challenge that's been around now for quite a while is farmers moving grain wagons and combines and other slow-moving equipment on highways where they legally have a right to be. And the emblem that says if you're a motorist, you're approaching a slow-moving vehicle emblem, it's the triangular-shaped, the orange center, and the border in fluorescent red. And it is, in most states now, a legal entity that says you can only use the SMV emblem on slow-moving equipment, not on stationary equipment, or not on fast-moving grain trucks or pickups. It is simply intended to say, if you're doing 60 miles an hour and you see that triangular-shaped slow-moving vehicle emblem, slow down, because it's probably doing 14 or 15 miles an hour. And every year at harvest time, particularly now, when we're moving heavy equipment from field to field on roads and highways, it becomes especially important. We get too many stories of automobiles rear-ending slow-moving equipment, somebody getting hurt or even killed. So, first of all, only on moving equipment. Don't use it as a mailbox stand or as a driveway marker. There is other fluorescent material to help you show that. So don't use it on stationary objects, because that destroys the meaning of the slow-moving vehicle emblem. So be careful. And if you are a farmer moving equipment on a road or a highway, be a good neighbor to motorists as they line up behind you trying to get by. And when you have a chance, pull off to the side, let the line of traffic make its way without endangering anybody, and it'll be a much better world. Oh, and one more thing on the subject of safety at this time of the year. Be sure you have a workable fire extinguisher on your combine. We hear about too many fires burning up combines this time of the year, and particularly with the dry weather and the heat that we've had the past month or so, conditions for fire in harvest fields on combines, it can happen. We've already seen two or three in Illinois in the early part of the harvest season. So, slow-moving vehicle, use it for its purpose, and if you see it on the highway, slow down. My thoughts on Samuelson Says, a presentation of Tribune Radio Networks. We'll talk markets with Max Armstrong and his guest when we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show.
Over the years, urban farms have sprouted up all over Chicago. This week, we visit a farm on an old rail line in the Holman Square neighborhood and learn about an organization that brings farms into Chicago public schools.
Mike Steven is outside the loop, up next at 6.
On Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Corn and soybean growers, we invite you to come and learn how to turn practical data and technology into profitable decisions at the second annual Ag Data Conference. It'll be going on at Coralville, Iowa, coming up the end of November. Making sense of precision technology and the data layers derived from it are key to improving your corn and soybean return on investment. And the best way to learn is from actual experience of other farmers and their advisors, along with a hands-on look at the data products, the drones, and the services that drive success. You'll gain insight and more from the Ag Data Conference, designed by the editors of Farm Progress Information brands Corn Soybean Digest and Farm Futures. Get all the information of the Ag Data Conference by going to the website, theagdataconference.com. It's November 29th and 30th at the Coralville Marriott Hotel near Iowa City, Iowa. Theagdataconference.com.
The folks at Freshwave have a very important question to ask. Do you know what's in your air freshener? Grab a bottle of that clean linen tropical citrus surprise air enhancer. You know, the one with the aerosol can that screams harmful to the environment. And take a look at the ingredients on the side of the bottle. Got any idea what all those nasty chemicals even do? Or better yet, can you even pronounce any of them? It's a totally different ballgame with Freshwave, because they care about our air. Freshwave natural odor-removing products are using plant extracts and water to remove odors safely, naturally, and effectively. That's all. No harsh chemicals. No phony fragrances. No kidding. If you've ever been curious about the ingredients in air care products, head to FreshwaveWorks.com today. Learn more about Freshwave natural odor-removing products, read what other people are saying about them, and find your nearest Freshwave retailer using the store locator. You'll be glad you did. Find Freshwave at Bed Bath & Beyond, Ace Hardware, Walgreens, and Target locations.
Well, this harvest weekend, we're talking with Steve Georgie from Allendale, who's come by our studio to visit at a very busy time. I bet farmers still check in with you, though, don't they, Steve?
They do all the time, even on the weekends.
What are you hearing? Well, first of all, let's talk about the progress on the harvest, what you're hearing from across the wide area that that you serve, and what the growers are telling you about their ability to get into the field or not.
Yes. Well, you know, with the drier temperature or the drier bias that's come through the Midwest here recently, it's given an opportunity to get out in the fields. If it's ready, they're going to get it. The early planted stuff looks really good. From what we've been hearing, the early harvest yields have been coming in better than expected, is the word that's being thrown around. So a little bit more friendlier for these guys, and bigger crops is what we've heard. So USDA, for the last several reports, everybody's been questioning what they have said, the bigger yields, some of the moves they've made. Now that's kind of tempered back a little bit, that maybe these guys aren't too far off, but it is still the early stuff. This is the early stage of harvest. We had a lot of replant out there, and that, as we get further and deeper into harvest, they're getting the good stuff first. So we'll have to see what kind of yields we get as we get deeper into harvest and really see what's out there.
Did you ever see a crop report more doubted by farmers than that August crop report?
No, I have not.
And then USDA came along in September and said, yep, it is there.
Guys, I wasn't kidding. Okay, it's still there. And so you start to hear, though, as these farmers and as these producers get in the field, it is a sense of concern. What do I do with it all? A lot of this old crop has been moved, and a lot of these elevators and more of these commercials holding a good deal of grain already. Now we've got a big crop right behind it. The next thought is, what do I do with it?
Some of that, I know, in commercial facilities has been moved out of bins and out onto the ground. And
yes.
So it's very visible out there, a visible reminder of how much we have already, I mean, at this early stage.
And that's where, if USDA is correct, and if we continue and see this consistency through harvest, yes, we're going to have a problem on our hands. What do we do with all of it? Do you store it? Do you sell it? We know prices are very low. And basis is extremely wide out in the country. And so as a producer that has to just sell it, you've got bills to pay. There's a lot of things that have to happen. But that question of, what do I do with it, is going to be more of a concern as we get deeper into harvest.
What's your sense of the stress, the financial stress that growers are going through right now? Obviously, you may tend to visit with the cream of the crop in your clientele, but what's the feeling you get?
Well, you know, it's an issue. This is now going on the third year of seeing these at break-evens or below break-evens for a lot of areas, and this year as well, you know, specifically for corn. Beans, on the other hand, you've gotten some opportunities. There may be some opportunities yet ahead. But for corn, you're never able to get above water here this year. And so producers aren't out there to farm in order to take a loss. But there is such an abundant supply of it right now that it is, as you say, stress. It's very stressful, because what do you do? And now they're making decisions when they don't want to. This is definitely a buyer's market, not a seller's market. And so that's why it is going to remain stressful this year, not only for the producer, but also the banker out there as well, that's wondering, what kind of a loan am I putting together here? How can we be selling this at such a low cost? And what are our needs moving forward? So this is not just the producer problem. Now it's also, we're hearing, stressing these banks as well.
Farmers do like harvest. I was reminded the other day. I did a little Twitter quiz on this, and 80% of the growers said they prefer the harvest season over the planting season.
Yes.
I thought maybe it'd be even more lopsided than that, but you know, there was 20% that, I guess, you know, like to see the end of cabin fever in the spring and get out and smell the fresh air and the developing plants.
Well, you get to see that hard work that they've put in order to grow this crop, and that's
right.
They get to see the success of it, and that is where it is a much better feeling during harvest than it is during planting season.
And if you do get some friendly yield surprises off that yield monitor, as you indicate, and as we've been hearing too from some of the growers in the field here in the early part of harvest, that helps too, doesn't it?
It sure does. You know, and it also helps, though, when we get a market or we get the prices to gain a little bit. And in the month of October, we tend to see a little bit of a bounce. And whether or not you want to call it because of insurance prices, which sit at $3.96 right now for corn and above $10 in the beans, But when you have a big crop, that doesn't really matter so much. The focus this year will be on South America. South America dives into a lot of their planning in the month of October. Right now, you've got a lot of talk out there that this La Nina is going to start setting in again and bring more of a drier bias down to areas of South America. And so we know bean demand has been strong. We need to see demand pick up for corn. Can this drier bias now move in and give us some hope where we have a huge crop here domestically? Can we get prices to rally and have an opportunity to become profitable again? Right now, that's almost what it's going to have to take.
Since you mentioned South America, are they still moving some of this year's crop that they harvested? And I ask you because, you know, in terms of soybeans, we're selling a good amount right now.
You know, our time is now, though. When we look at our price versus South American prices, we still are very competitive, if not actually under South America's price. We just had this past week, 3 million metric tons is what we had just sold. That is a record sales for this time. But we also have to think of it, we're still about 50 million bushel behind the pace that USDA currently has us on. USDA's number this year for exports alone is a record amount. Well, we need to. We know we've had big sales. We've had record sales as well, or record yields. So we have to move this, but we are. And so even though these sales look really big, and our time is right now to be making these sales, we still are a little bit behind pace from what USDA has said.
What kind of thoughts do you share with the growers about strategy here as they're picking your brain when they call in from the cab?
You know, and it's tough. It's a very, very hard situation for producers because what do you do? A lot of this old crop had to be sold because farmers needed cash. So they do have rooms in the bins. Guys will be storing this crop, especially for corn. I'm hearing a lot of guys out there moving beans, pricing beans, because they can get more for them. You've got a good yield out there, and you've got bills to pay. And so what are you going to sell? Corn, which really is not profitable, they're storing that again. You've got to be careful doing that. We saw what happened last year. Prices were just unable to rally or get any kind of feed under them because we had such a massive amount. Well, we are going to do that again unless we see demand pick up. So right now, guys are selling beans, trying to find ways to sell corn as well. If you have to make sales, re-own it. But re-own it later into next year because this year, as it sits right now, we've got big crops. The markets probably are going to remain kind of stale. But prepare for that larger move and give yourself an opportunity to gain something on that crop that you had to sell because you needed some cash.
October, you say, as you indicated earlier, might provide a little bit of opportunity for
it. Typically does.
Some crop.
Yeah, historically we get a little bit of a bounce. Usually it's that early part of October as far as the beans, usually around the 2nd. And for corn, it's a little later, maybe around 7th to the 10th, where we do get a recovery for that for the month of October. You get a lot of farmers that talk because of insurance, as I mentioned, or it is that primary focus now on South America. What do they look like? And as I mentioned, the bean rally, it's because of our demand. That demand machine kicks on here. Our prices are low enough. We've gotten into harvest, and now we've generated some momentum, and that gives us this rally for October. And so if you have to sell it or if you can hang on to it, look for a little bounce here in October in order to make those sales.
It strikes me that those dates generally, not by much, but a little bit precede the October crop report.
Yeah,
are there any generalities that you've seen in the past from USDA's October release?
You know, from our research and what we've done, as much as I even hate saying it, but usually bigger crops get bigger. Smaller crops get smaller. When USDA is putting out this idea that we're going to end up seeing great yields out there, now we are. Tendency is that that crop ends up getting bigger or doesn't move too much. So you can't really look for a drastic change out of that October report. It's probably going to have to be any significant change will be on the January, the final numbers in January. So we may have to wait a while in order to see some kind of major change out of USDA.
Yeah, some of us looked at that August report when it came out. Yep, it's going to be the highest numbers of the year here.
I was one of them that said the exact same thing, but, you know, who knows? But as we get into these reports, USDA is in this, they're in this mode right now where these crops are there. And unless we see something different than what we're hearing out in the fields, they probably aren't going to change much either.
Steve Georgi from Allendale Incorporated.
We are about 2 minutes before news time at 6 o'clock here on WGN Radio Chicago. We ended the trading week price-wise yesterday in the grain market with December wheat falling 6 cents a bushel. So $4.48 is where December wheat will start trading next Monday. December corn ended the day at $3.55 a bushel yesterday, up 3 3/4. And November soybeans gained 8 1/4 cents and ended the week at $9.68 in light of the larger than expected storage numbers and supply numbers, a rather surprising reaction from grain traders at the Chicago Board of Trade. And then in the livestock picture, well, I'm sure I'll be hearing from Arizona cattlemen today that it's a challenge to make money at these beef prices, particularly when beef prices at the retail meat counter doesn't come down that much. The December live cattle futures down just 2 cents a hundredweight yesterday at $115.25. And the October feeder cattle contract down $1.02 at $152.22. On the other hand, that pig crop report on Thursday considered friendly, certainly not bearish. And so the December lean hog contract ended the day yesterday, $59.95 a hundredweight, up $1.42 for the day. And again today, we'll be visiting with elected officers of the Arizona Cattlemen's Group and the president of the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. We'll be in attendance at that 85th edition of the Yavapai County, Arizona Club Calf Sale and Beef Barbecue. You all have a good week and a good day and a good weekend, and thank you again for joining us on Chicago's very own 720 WGN and WGNradio.com.
Orion Samuelson keeps you connected to the world of business and agriculture on WGN. Hear his reports weekday mornings on The Steve Cochran Show and during the noon hour on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Plus, catch Orion and Max on Saturday mornings at 5 a.m. only on Chicago's WGN Radio 720.